Welcome back, everyone. I'm Cass Pianci, and I am joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Bennett Tomlin. How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing well, Cass. How are you?
I am doing well. Today, we're talking about, oh, man, a simple but complex topic, DRW and Cumberland Global. These are the companies that provide liquidity to the cryptocurrency ecosystem. I want to preface all of this by saying that Bennett and I are not lawyers. We are not financial advisors. We aren't hedge fund managers or venture capitalists. We are talking about a company that we do not do business with and that we can only reference in the frame of what is publicly known. Now, I think it's important for us to share that more than ignore it. I think that this is something that isn't widely spoken about. So I just want us to talk about it. There's no presupposition to this. We're not trying to do a gotcha. But I want us to try to talk about this in the clearest way possible. And yeah, if you could go ahead and get us started, Bennett, that would be great.
I can certainly try. And I think it's important to understand what DRW and Cumberland do. DRW is a pretty massive trading firm based out of Chicago that does a lot of trading in the futures and derivatives markets. And then Cumberland Mining is the cryptocurrency-focused offshoot of DRW. Cumberland Mining specifically does a lot in the cryptocurrency space. They are a massive over-the-counter trading desk. They are frequently a liquidity provider on various exchanges. They are deeply involved in DeFi. They are the trading partner for many institutions that have entered cryptocurrency. And they are one of the most well-connected firms in all of crypto.
That doesn't get into even the background of how DRW began, when it began, and how it started. DRW is the initials of the founder, Don R. Wilson. DRW was started in 1992. And yeah, like you said, they are a major player in the futures and derivatives markets. They can move markets with the amount of liquidity they provide. And certainly, as we now know publicly, widely, Cumberland, the subsidiary, the cryptocurrency branch of DRW, is arguably the number one liquidity provider in all of cryptocurrency. I think it's interesting, and I don't know if you have something to say about this or not, but I think it's interesting that while this was widely known by people within the industry, most retail traders and people that I've spoken to have never heard of Cumberland or DRW.
I'm of two minds about it. I remember when we discussed the importance of Cumberland Mining in 2018, and some traders thought we were overstating their role, and perhaps we were. But I also wonder, like in the stock market, how many retail traders, for example, know who Citadel is, who's executing on a lot of these options contracts and things like that. I think often the large firms that have these very influential and well-connected roles in these markets are not necessarily super well known to the retail end trader, but are likely well known to the people who are interacting more deeply with that kind of plumbing. It does sometimes seem as though Cumberland Mining in specific prefers to keep a muted and low profile.
And you're right insofar as I think this is common with private companies, right? You're not going to get a lot of transparency from Citadel or from Cumberland, but that makes sense. They have no transparency that they're required to give. I don't know what that says because there's an issue. Maybe there isn't an issue and maybe most people are fine with it. But to me, there's an issue when the number one liquidity providers, whether it's in the S&P 500 or in cryptocurrencies, are required to provide zero transparency. And the only people they're reporting to are the people they're filing SARs with or whatever. It's just, there's no accountability.
Yeah. And I think the reason we wanted to talk about them is because they are such an important part of the market in terms of like scale of their role. And because they are unknown, we thought this was a good opportunity to perhaps introduce people to them. And, I mean, they are, as you mentioned, possibly one of the largest liquidity providers in all of cryptocurrency. Recent reporting from Protos suggested that they might be the number one or number two issuer of tethers in all of history, which they're presumably using to liquidity provide on exchange and for their OTC operations. But knowing that they are the number one or number two in that role suggests that they are this incredibly important driver of activity in the cryptocurrency market more broadly.
And this actually gets into another topic that you and I discussed before, which is at some level. So I think a good example here is people wondered how so much Tether ended up on Binance, but Binance wasn't a number one issuer of Tethers. I think what you need to do at that point is look at a company like Cumberland, right? They are market making and they are providing liquidity at exchanges like Binance.
Yeah, and I think this is actually an important thing for us to pause on for a second, is that I think for years this misconception has kind of persisted about Tether, and I'm sure at times we've even been wrong about this, that the exchanges are the ones purchasing the Tethers. And more often than not, it seems to be these major trading firms like Alameda Research and Cumberland who are actually purchasing it and using it on these exchanges for market making and things like that. And so I think it's important to understand who's driving that activity on those exchanges.
And they're obviously paying a fee for those services, right? So you're paying Cumberland to provide this to you. While CZ and Binance may be crypto rich, I think it's fair to say that they're realistically kind of fiat poor, right? These are not people who have billions of dollars in fiat sitting in bank accounts around the world. They're people who have acquired a lot of Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever, through transaction fees and other, maybe your exchange going down at the right times. But anyway, they've acquired a lot of crypto. But crypto doesn't necessarily pay the bills. And so you have to ask yourself, how are they paying DRW and Cumberland? Because odds are they're not simply giving them billions of dollars, USD, to buy those tethers. So even if Cumberland or DRW were able to have that money, they're not getting cash to give to Tether. What are they getting paid in, do you think? Speculation here.
That was going to be the first phrase I said, is we're crossing into the realm of speculation here. The first one is it's possible we are underestimating how much liquid USD these exchanges have. The other simple explanation for me would be that they are being paid in the exchange's equity or debt. They're gaining some kind of controlling interest or claim against the exchange itself. For some of these exchanges, that might actually not be in the form of equity or debt, but in a form of the exchange token. So for example, for Binance, it could be paid in BNB, in Binance Coin. And for Cumberland, who is this major and well-connected OTC player, that's not a super big deal for them. It seems reasonable they'd be able to liquidate that reasonably easily. Or it's just possible they're being paid in the much more liquid cryptos that they're probably collecting the fees in. So Bitcoin or Ether, right? And again, for a firm like Cumberland, that's again a thing they could reasonably easy convert to dollars. The most potentially problematic of those explanations to me would be if Cumberland was getting equity in a lot of these exchanges they're market making for, just because that amplifies the potential influence they have over the industry, right? If Cumberland is not just providing the liquidity on a huge number of these exchanges, but also has an ownership stake in many of these exchanges. And then they also are going out and doing VC investing in a bunch of the companies that are coming up in the space and getting equity stakes in those. And then also running a DeFi incubator where they're investing in a whole bunch of DeFi token sales, you can see how being in that central point in the industry, being connected to all these, can allow their influence to compound as they gain stakes in more and more of the entities in the crypto space.
And this is something that we love to point to, which are systemic risks. So at the same time that you're talking about compounding influence in the space, it's also creating a larger and larger systemic risk if this is what is happening. And that's a huge if. It could very well be not at all what is happening. But if that is what is happening, yeah, it does create a systemic risk. It definitely does, right?
Well, and I think it's important to draw a quick line here on what we know is happening for sure and what we're speculating is happening. Like, we know for sure that Cumberland Mining is actively VC investing. They were VC investors in Simplex, a payment processor. They were VC investors in the Vega Protocol, which is a DeFi derivatives platform. And then they are partners in the Chicago DeFi Alliance and the Chicago DeFi Alliance Accelerator. And all of the DeFi protocols that go through the accelerator, they end up getting a portion of the tokens from that protocol just as part of that. So that's what we know they're doing for sure. The part we are unsure about is if they ever get paid in equity or something like that for providing liquidity.
Right. And it's important to point that out.
Well, and I think the reason, just before we move on, the reason it's important to point out is even if they're not getting equity in the exchanges, this is still an incredibly influential company. They're the trading partner for the Goldman Sachs Bitcoin derivatives, for the Bank of America Bitcoin futures, and then doing all this VC investing and liquidity providing. They have a role in trading so many of the markets around the world in crypto.
Which is actually funny to point out and think about when we reflect on their history, because their history has been the most important moment in their history, essentially, was their lawsuit with the CFTC, brought against them by the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Commission.
So what was so special about that lawsuit, Cass?
Okay, I want to preface this with, one, we're not lawyers. Two, I think what I find interesting is that the funds that you mentioned, oftentimes the regulators will seek out DRW to discuss these funds with them, to discuss the viability of these funds with them, to discuss the availability of liquidity and desire for these to be a marketed investment scheme. So I just think that's funny when you reflect on the fact that the CFTC brought a 5-year lawsuit against DRW that they ultimately lost. And I think it's really important to recognize that, because it's affected a lot of markets since. The CFTC brought suit against DRW for apparent market manipulation, attempted market manipulation of the IDEX USD 3-month interest rate swap futures contract cleared at the International Derivatives Clearinghouse. So a long, complicated way of saying they were trying to manipulate a futures derivative market was the argument by the CFTC. Ultimately, they were declared innocent, but it wasn't because they weren't doing that. It was because what they were doing wasn't illegal. It's not that it wasn't ugly. It's not that it wasn't gross. And it's not that it wasn't something that people should be incredibly wary of. It's just that it wasn't illegal. Arguably, because we haven't really seen any action nearing that since, arguably, the Dodd-Frank Act may have altered the way companies could be prosecuted for stuff like this. But we've seen no enforcement to suggest that. So that could very well be totally false. But I think part of why we see DRW and Cumberland so involved in cryptocurrency markets is because of an edge. You know, things that pleb traders in the space just are not cognizant of yet, but also illiquidity.
I think you're certainly right. One of the most striking lines from that lawsuit for me is when Judge Sullivan wrote, "It is not illegal to be smarter than your counterparties in a swap transaction." And DRW in general is particularly good at finding places where they have that edge and they are smarter than their counterparties. And I think they've found in crypto a variety of markets where they are often smarter than their counterparties. I'm remembering some comments made by BTC VIX, a trader in the Bitcoin space who claims to have previously worked for DRW. Back in 2017, he was discussing in this one group chat about what they were able to do in crypto. And his exact quote was, "Our algos were designed to take retail traders' money. Stop runs, shakeouts, fakeouts. Because of how much liquidity is centralized in entities like Cumberland Mining, and because they have some of the best quant traders out there, and they have access to all of the market information all at once, I think that they are often able to take advantage of, like you said, illiquidity and structural inefficiencies that other people aren't able to. And because of that, they can generate significant profits.
This is what I was referring to before, and this is from Skadden. The DRW decision does leave a significant question unanswered regarding manipulative activity under the CEA and CFTC rules. Notably, the conduct at issue in DRW ended just before the Dodd-Frank Act amendments and the CFTC's expanded enforcement authority under Rule 180.1, and it remains unclear how a court would apply the CFTC's current enforcement authority to facts similar to the DRW case. The CFTC's rulemaking is clear that the Commission does not interpret Section 6C1 to require the CFTC to prove an artificial price when pursuing, quote, fraud and fraud-based manipulative schemes. So I think that statement lends credence to the idea that and this is hearkening back to our discussions with more well-informed individuals like Rohan and Preston, but the idea that many of the enforcement action that we're seeking or the regulation that we're seeking, many of those actions are really covered by current rules and regulations. It's nothing new. It's just that it's not being enforced.
Yeah, I think there are likely many actors in the cryptocurrency space who have violated the letter of the law. And so it's important to realize that that doesn't necessarily mean regulators will pursue a case against entities who break the law. It can be expensive for them to go after these entities. And if there's limited expectation of the CFTC actually getting a win, they can be disincentivized from doing that. And I think it's also what we see in the previous lawsuit against DRW is that actions can seem very manipulative and can seem to materially change the price of these assets in these major ways without being illegal.
The concept is, this was the lawsuit that the CFTC brought against DRW, is that they were able to manipulate prices in this futures market by bidding in a different market and just continuously upping their bid. And by continuously upping their bid, this referenced price by this futures market was constantly going up, right? They were able to profit off of that. And I'm trying to think of a real world comparison, and one that I can think of that maybe it's not a fair comparison, but it's the best I can do, is I'm trying to sell land or a house. And I set the price the first year at $100,000 and no one is interested. And then the next year, I still don't care that no one is interested. I up the price to $120,000. Still no one is interested. So I up the price to $150,000. Now, there's no futures market involved in what I'm discussing right now. So it's not a fair comparison, but if I did that, there's nothing illegal about me doing that until it sells. And via the courts, there was nothing illegal about what DRW was doing in the futures markets.
There was a piece of academic work that came out recently that I'm not fully qualified to judge, but I think might be relevant to discuss in this context. And that was by Carol Alexander, Daniel Heck, and Andreas Keck that looked at the title of the paper is The Role of Binance in Bitcoin Volatility Transmission. And specifically, what they seem to notice is that it was the Binance futures market and changes in that market that seem to then drive variations in volatility across the rest of the spot markets in the cryptocurrency ecosystem. And so I think this suggests the possibility that there's the same kind of potential interconnectedness between these different markets in crypto that allowed DRW to get this advantageous position that was discussed in the lawsuit.
I want to reiterate two things. One, you and I, we're not trading $100 million crypto accounts. So we're not calling DRW Cumberland regularly to ask about liquidity and ask about maker prices and taker prices. We're not doing that. But I also want to reiterate that what we do know is that there likely the number one or number two Tether issuer, and therefore the number one liquidity provider in all of cryptocurrency. It's a centralized game, and they are the leader of the pack. So it's a company that not a lot of people know about, and I just wish more people spoke about them as such a major player in this up-and-coming, thriving industry, right?
We're both being very careful with our words today.
It's rare for us. It is rare for us. I'm going to edit all of this. I'm probably going to edit most of this out, but if you could hear the noises and the long thought out pauses that both of us are having today. Look, you know, let's just be straightforward. We're talking about a multi-billion dollar company that we don't want to fuck with. And I don't think, you know, it's not like they're known for bringing lawsuits against people. It's not like they're known for being litigious. I'm not suggesting that. I just think we want to parse our words really carefully, and we don't want to say anything that could be misconstrued or just flat out proven false, right?
Yeah. And I think part of the reason I'm hesitating with this and being extraordinarily careful is because DRW and Cumberland Mining, there is no evidence of wrongdoing, of lawbreaking, of any bit of noncompliance in any part of their process whatsoever. However, they are such a centrally connected entity and so deeply important to so many parts of the industry that if there were wrongdoing, which again, there is no evidence of, there is the potential for them to do significant wrongdoing, right? If there was manipulation, if they were manipulating, which again, there is no evidence of, they could potentially do it on a very large and very effective scale due to their positioning in the industry.
Right. The character I think of when I think of who best represents DRW Cumberland, Mark Baum, goes and meets with this JP Morgan derivatives trader. They go and have dinner together or whatever. And this trader is just the biggest dick swinging asshole in the world. And he's talking about, you know, I make this much money. How much do you make? I fly in a private helicopter to New York. What do you do? It doesn't mean anything they're doing is illegal. It just means a lot of it might be kind of gross.
And I'd be very careful if I was the counterparty on the other side of a transaction with them, because my expectation would be that they know things that I do not.
And I think that's a fair summation. We're not trying to disparage the good name of DRW Cumberland. We're just trying to call attention to a large player in the space and in the futures trading space that doesn't get a lot of attention. And I just think people should know about them. It's not even a matter of regulation or anything else. People should just be widely aware. Like, we all know McDonald's. I think maybe Tyson is the one who supplies. I don't know who supplies them with meat. That's who you should be paying attention to. You shouldn't be paying attention to McDonald's. Pay attention to the meat supplier, right? Like, who cares about Robinhood? Pay attention to Citadel. Who cares about your tiny little options put or call position? Who's on the other end of that position, right? At least be aware of it. It doesn't mean don't take that position or don't trade, or it just means be aware of the risk that you're taking on. That's all.
Yeah. And like, for me, part of the thing that makes Cumberland Mining interesting, and it's part of the same thing that makes similar entities like Alameda Research interesting, is how many different functions they fulfill. They're market makers, they're OTC desks, they're prop desks, they're quant traders, they're high frequency traders, they are venture capital investors, they are startup incubators, they are creating the codes of conducts for the cryptocurrency ecosystem more broadly. They're buying the Silk Road Bitcoins at auction. They're the trading partner for these major institutions. They're mining cryptocurrencies. That's how they got the name mining, is because they mine Zcash.
To be fair, they're no longer called Cumberland Mining. Remember that. It is Cumberland Global now. So they go through name changes. They go through their... There's a lot going on. We know 0.25% of that. I just want people to be aware of these companies. It's important. Like you said, they're involved in everything, in every aspect from ground floor to the highest peak of Mount Everest in crypto. They are involved, and people should know that. There are waves of retail that not only do they never get this involved and never know about this, but every few years there's new people getting involved, right? Every few years there's new people being introduced to all of this. Our memories in crypto are that of a fruit fly. It might be totally obvious to you and your friends who have been in the space since 2012, 2013, 2014. It isn't obvious to everyone, and people should know. So that's going to do it. Any DRW Cumberland fans out there, you know, give us a thumbs up and a subscribe. tune in next week when we discuss, I don't know, who the f*** knows, but yeah, it won't be something like DRW. Something we'll be far more open to discuss.
We're making this up as we go along, people.
Tune in next week. Thanks, guys.